I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. At Lighthouse Consulting Services, we are celebrating 22 years in business and just entering our ninth year of doing open lines. We have a few new exciting programs. First, we have our new 2016 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on our publication event tab. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Our topic today is the keys to creating a successful multi-generational family business. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insights to your organization. And we do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, and leadership training. In fact, we just opened an office in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for any of your folks over there or provide ideas of how to interact with a U.S. company, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to the calls we get from clients both domestically and globally to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion. We'll attempt to respond to as many as possible, so please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. And at the conclusion, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. So write down questions during our time together, either send them in or hold them until we open the line up. I take great pleasure in introducing our special guest, Ken Udi, who is a very close friend, business colleague, and a very cool guy. Ken is a director of the USC Marshall Family Business Program and managing director of the Board Group. Before joining the Board Group, he served as president CEO of six different private equity-backed companies in a variety of issues ranging from logistics to building materials, to racing, to women's cosmetics. That's broad.
That's a checkered background, isn't it?
That's right. And that, what they had in common was the need to create stability in the organization, grow the top line, and improve inefficiencies to drive profitability. Ken earned an MBA and an MPR from the University of Southern California, where he has launched the Marshall Family Business Program, which is focused on helping family-owned businesses create and preserve wealth by increasing the professionalism of the business and the effectiveness of the family. I feel privileged to have Ken with us today to share ideas that are going to help all of us in meeting the challenges that everybody faces. Also, registration for our next program is going to begin at the end of this program. The topic is going to be, it's actually session two. It's around hiring, where to go fishing for candidates, and what to do when all else fails. Barry Deutsch is our guest. We're doing a series of three programs on that very hot topic, so please sign up for that later on, or you can go to our site and find that also. Ken, I want to welcome you back to Open Line.
Thank you, Dana. Appreciate it. Appreciate that the people take the next 40, 45 minutes or so to share some ideas about what it takes to build an effective and multi-generational family business. And there are a couple different tools that we'll be talking about here today. Let me see if I can advance the slide. There we go. And this whole space of family-owned businesses is just so important to the United States. About 80 to 90% of all of the businesses in North America are family businesses. They account for about 60% of the company's total employment. Close to 80% of all new job creation are all family businesses. But unfortunately, family businesses are also an endangered species because only about 30% make it to the second generation, 12% to the third generation. By the time you get to fourth generation, it's fewer than 5% of those companies are still viable and active. So it's an important part to the economy. and it's an endangered species, and a lot of it comes around to the issues in the family dynamics. And that's, you know, what we are addressing at the USC Marshall Family Business Program. Dana mentioned our mission statement, but that really tells what we're trying to do, you know, in our program, but also the theme for today's discussion. And that is to help family-owned businesses create and preserve wealth by increasing the professionalism of the business and the effectiveness of the family. So there's a lot in there. It's about making money in your operating business, making sure you transfer that money out of the operating business into other asset classes so that if the lawsuit comes or your business model changes, you know, you still have wealth for your family to benefit from. By increasing the professionalism of the business so you can stay competitive, and by increasing the effectiveness of the family, which are some of the key issues we're going to get through here today. One of the models that we use in our family business program is the six transition model that Lee Hausner and Ernie Dowd presented in their book, Hats Off to You, and you can see that now on the screen. And it's important to look at these six individual buckets individually, because if you look at them all smeared together, you know, it's a little more difficult to navigate. And you'll see on the model that the founder's transition goes above everything. So that as the business grows and the founder ages, you know, his or her transition is critical to everything else that happens. The family's transition also goes underneath everything, and that is also critical. As a family grows, as kids become young adults, they go to school, they want to come back and either work into business or decide not to. They get married, grandkids come up, death, divorce, a cousin loses a job. What happens with the families interfacing with the business and all of those dynamics? Then separately, we look at the business model itself to make sure that the business is solid. Separately, we look at the management and governance of the business. Separately, look at the ownership of the business, because sometimes equal is not equitable and equitable is not equal. And then finally, we look at the legacy and the estate planning areas. And these are the different components of the discussion today. Now, in a family business, what do the families normally want? Well, mom wants a prosperous business, family harmony, personal well-being. But what do they often get? Well, they often get underperforming businesses, some dysfunctionals, and some personal vendettas. And you got to look at, you know, why these things can happen. And it boils down to primarily conflicting values and different definitions of personal well-being. Now, you think about the conflicting values. In a family, you are born into the family. It's relationship-based. You're looking for, you know, something that's safe, something that's equal. Well, rather, in a business, you aren't born into it, you're hired into it. It's not relationship-oriented, it's results-oriented. It's not necessarily equal, it's what's equitable. It's not necessarily what's safe, it's taking risks. So you have these conflicting values going on between the business and the family that you need to recognize and effectively manage. And then also you have the different personal definitions of personal well-being. You know, I might be a risk taker. My wife might be more conservative. I might want to grow the business. My children might want income. You know, I'm very active in the business. Other people are very passive. So you need to be looking at and understanding these as you view the business and where you're coming from with the business.
Ken, we just had a question come in on the last slide.
Yeah.
So the difference from a first generation where mom or dad could be a pure entrepreneur, second generation, let's say one of the kids wants to emulate somehow the parent, but let's say they're not the entrepreneurial type, then you get third generation that could be all mixed up. not necessarily, but
yep.
Good. How do you, any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think if you go to the stereotype entrepreneur, you know, the founder, it's an A personality, makes this decision, very forceful type of a personality. So in that space, you know, at home and in the business, in that space, there's normally not room for a kid to, or the next generation, to also be a personality, very strong, and making all the big decisions. You're just going to be butting heads a little bit too often for family harmony. So normally you would see the second generation to be much more consensus building in their decision-making processes. And then if that second generation is more consensus building, by the time you get to the third generation, there is room for somebody to be a little bit more stand-up and a personality.
Now, Thank you.
When you think about the evolving role of the founder. Now, I believe a business goes through different stages. You have the startup where that founder is the doer and the initiator. And then the business is starting to grow. It's starting to kick off a little bit of cash. And now the founder needs to be not as much the doer, but they need to become more of a builder. And then as it continues to grow, the founder needs to be the manager, needs to be the teacher, needs to grow into the mentor, and then finally the ambassador and the door opener. So this is one of the key things that, a founder needs to think about in their transition, and the key things that a family needs to be coaching the founder through in their transition. The family and the founder need to realize that there is life after business, and preparing to transition the leadership of the business to that next person, the transfer of power. We're going to talk a little bit about family, plans and family constitutions, but, this evolution of the founder's role in the business and role in the family and community and society is pretty important. And you got to make sure that the founder's financial independence is secure outside of the business, or they will tend to never let go. When planning that transition to the next generation, think about extending the leash little bits at a time. Don't just throw your keys on the table and say, "I'm done. I'm retiring tomorrow." Think about grooming and managing and mentoring that next leadership. Don't expect a clone of yourself. Different leadership styles are different, and they're personal to that individual. That's where I've used Dana over the years when I've gone into new companies to share my personality profile so that people know what my communication and management skills is like, and I also look at the team for that same thing so we can get on the same page with our communications.
Hey, Ken, a question just came in. This one has to be like father and son. So how does any thoughts on how the father wants to do things a certain way, at the same time wants to mentor the son, but the son has their own way of doing things. Any thoughts on how to prevent the conflict?
The core to the successful multi-generational family business and effective family comes down to communication, Dana, and making sure that you have the good communication process and systems in place so that the parents in the next generation can effectively talk about their different styles, and to focus on what the results are and put the metrics in place so that if you are achieving the results, then maybe the different approach or management style is fine. There are a lot of ways to skin a cat, right? So if you define what the results are that you're after and have the metrics in place to monitor to make sure you are moving forward and have a solid communications system in place, and transparency around the effectiveness of the business, it can work quite well. But without that open communication, it's not going to happen.
So it's matrix driven. Another question just came in. Any thoughts on who should be doing the mentoring for a close family member? Should it be the parent, or should somebody else from the outside be brought in?
I think it's best to have someone from the outside help to groom and mentor.
Okay.
I think an outsider can give more honest and objective feedback and also do it in a safe environment. So, you aren't, calling out, pointing out the deficiencies of the next generation. So I think there's a lot of wisdom in having someone help out.
Okay.
And there are some, assessment tools and such out there too, because you got to know where somebody's strengths are to make sure that they are equipped to fulfill the role. We're going to talk about management in a minute, and I think the health of the business should be the overriding goal, so that if the next generation is not prepared and competent to lead the business, I think it's fine to bring in an outside manager that is competent to lead the business, because management is different than ownership. You know, back to that six transitions model we looked at, we'll see again in a few more slides, each one of those buckets needs to be looked at individually. So you got the business model itself, is it the right business? Then you got the management and governance of the business, and it may or may not be the family member, if it's appropriate. And then you got the ownership, which is different. I was talking to one family yesterday, and next in line are three daughters that are not active in the business. We're talking with them saying it is okay when dad steps down to retire to bring in an outside CEO to run the business, because you know those sisters can remain owners and on the board of directors and then bring in some other outside advisors to get on the board so that the board can help make sure the strategy for the business is appropriate and the sisters can enjoy the benefits of being the owner.
That's great. Thank you.
Back to the founder. Make sure that the founder's retirement income is secure and outside of the business, or again, they might never let go, and avoid the often trap that all of the wealth of the family is just in the business. Those more successful families that are working with our family business program, you know, have the operating business that generated the wealth, but now they're transitioning into commercial real estate and are a separate LLC is owning the building that they're leasing for the business purposes, just doing some smart things to get wealth outside of the business and working for them. Here again is the you know, this transitions model that will beat into your head. This was in the book Hats Off to You that Lee Hausner and Ernie Dowd had written. All right, now we're transitioning to the family's role in, you know, the evolution of the successful multi-generational family business. And communications is key. I'll probably only say it about 47 more times, but you know, you got to be aware of the family's goal to look for the right balance between the business and the families, and to value the different differences that come with the families, particularly when children marry. You know, they get the whole different dynamics coming in when the in-laws come into the business. Their communication style and their family might be different. They may or may not have come from a family business. So be aware of all those changing dynamics and what it can mean. And these dynamics will evolve and change as people grow older, when the business is working well or if it faces challenges, when grandkids show up, if substance abuse, you know, comes into the picture, death, divorce, or just all kinds of things that can rock the boat in a family. And it takes, you know, good communication system and effective family leadership to be prepared to address all these different things that can come. We're going to move now into some concepts around the family's transition. The first is that managing a hat collection, communication, governance, and then making sure that the next generation are competent. The image of the hat collection is pretty fun. Lee Hausner heard a person speaking at a YPO convention in Canada, and he was the next generation. When he came out of school, he had a chance to run one of the family's divisions in their business. And he was saying that his golf game never got better than when he was running that division, but unfortunately he never hit his numbers. So after two or three years of, you know, shooting par golf but missing his financial numbers, he came to work one day and the controller said, your dad has a check for you at home. Can you go see him? And that normally meant there was a dividend or distribution check, but not this time. When he went home, dad had two hats by the swimming pool. He put on the first hat that had CEO embroidered across the front of it, and he handed his son a check and says, yes, son, I do have a check for you today, but it's your severance check. Unfortunately, you're fired because we've talked about it. It's difficult to run a family business, but you never hit your numbers. He took that hat off and put on the next hat that had dad embroidered across the top of it. And he said, son, I understand you lost your job today. And I gave him a big hug, and he goes, I want you to know your mother and I are going to be so supportive. So we grabbed onto that image of hats. And in a family business, there are about a dozen different hats: CEO, parent, child, owner, advisor, warehouseman, whatever it might be. And if a situation comes up, and if you have a hat for that situation, you need to put that hat on. In each hat, it has a role, it has a responsibility, and it's accountable to somebody or a group of people. So think about, as you're going through your business life and situations come up, do you have a hat for that situation, yes or no? If so, which hat is it? Is it the parent hat or the CEO hat or the child hat? And then what's your responsibility in that situation, and who are you accountable for? And that helps our discussions within our program and working with families about, you know, what are we talking about in terms of which of the transitions in that sixth transition model, and do you have a hat? Which hat are you wearing? And what's your role in this situation? What's your responsibility in this situation? And who are you accountable for the decision? So it's very visual, and it works really, really well. The next area is building that collaborative model and understanding where people are coming from, because different people have different filters on, different headsets that are, it depends where they are generationally, what their education is, what their role in the business. And you got to make sure that you're building your communication skills and your transparency skills. And you're doing it in a way where when you're speaking, the other person can hear and understand and accept. There are some people that are visual learners, there are some that are verbal learners. So you need to know within your family and your business how to best communicate with people. Part of the challenge is also with the family deciding, who's going to make which decision. That's based a lot on which hat it is for the situation. How are the decisions going to be communicated? Again, think about, do you have family meetings regularly? And if so, are they verbal or are they visual? Are there handouts? What is that whole communication system look like? And do it in a way where people can openly discuss and ask questions. Many times, if it's a stickier situation, having a facilitator is an important thing to do for the family business to make sure it's effective. Make sure that you are defining what you want your leadership and your family to look like in the future. I always like people to build an organizational chart, thinking 5 years out, 3 to 5 years out, and what competencies need to be on that org chart, and then look internally at the family and the business today to see who has which skill set, and can somebody effectively bridge from where they are today to what you need 5 years from now, and if so, how can you help them with the bridge in the education and the training? Or, we alluded to it before, if there's just nobody within the family that has the capability to be the CEO 5 years from now when the business is growing, just define that, accept that, and know what that picture looks like. We also recommend that you talk about what the rules are before a family member can come to the business. Do they need to work outside for 3 years before coming to the business? If they're working outside, do they need to get promoted once or twice to prove that they are competent? You must make sure that there is a job description in place before a family member can come assume that job, so you know what the tasks are and the responsibilities. You need to know what the performance reviews look like so that if that family member is successful. You need to think about what the compensation should be for that individual, because we believe that compensation should be based on merit and results. And the CEO normally makes a little bit more than the VP of operations, which normally makes a little bit more than the warehouse manager, and that family businesses should pay market rates based on their contributions. It's interesting, Dana. A lot of businesses have their strategic plans. Not many families have their strategic plan. Most businesses have an employee manual, for the guidelines for what an employee looks like. Not many families have a family policy manual about what the rules for entering the family business that we were just talking about a minute ago, or the consequences for bad behavior. And these tools for a sophisticated family are important to give them the foundation for their personal growth and development. So a strategic plan, what do you want the family dynamics and wealth situation to look like 10 years from now, 20 years from now? A family constitution, which are the guidelines on how you're going to operate to achieve your goals. The family policy manual on how family members are going to be treated if and when they enter the business. And then the communication plan. How often are you going to have family meetings? What does it look like? Or is it verbal or visual? What about the level of transparency within the family about the family's wealth or the performance of the business? These are all things that should really be talked about in advance. I like to say talk about it when you're sober before you get into the heat of the battle.
Well put.
You know, and for the family, think about what your vision is, what your value system is, and what your mission statement is. You know, one of my life's mentors is Phil Matthews, who built up Bell Sports, Bell Helmet. And Phil said, you know, if you have the right mission statement for your business and the right value statement for your business, decisions get to be pretty easy because you can compare it to the mission and you can compare it to your value statement, and it gets to be easy. So it's the same recommendation for a family and for the family business. We're transitioning now to the business model within the six transitions model. We've talked a little bit about the role of the founder and how the founder needs to manage their transition, the role of the family and how the family needs to think about its role in the business and its transition as the business grows. And now we start to go into these other four areas of this six transition. So it's the business model, the management and governance of the model, ownership, and then the estate planning and the legacy. So in the business model, in the management, you know, be realistic and open to what your options are, because the ideal candidate may or may not be, you know, a family member. And I think it's okay to bring in outside people to run the business if that's the best decision for the growth of the business, because remember those six transitions. Management does not necessarily have to be ownership. So if the business model is operating most effectively to create wealth for the owners and for the family, you know, it's okay to consider outside management. That is not a family failure at all. And in this environment, we were talking earlier about, you know, if you would sell your business, where else would you invest your money to get the same return? Well, if you have like those four sisters that might not be interested in running the business, that's a perfect situation where if you've got a good business model, bring in an outside management team, allow them to continue to grow the business, get the right board of advisors in place so that the owners can continue to benefit. And then take an active role in leadership and team building, you know, because culture in a business and culture in a family are really critical, and you can't not manage that, and you can't not get involved in that. You need to do what you can to build a leadership team and build a culture that you want that will last for multiple generations. I mentioned a few times advisors. I think an advisory board for the business is really important and can also be an effective coach for the family, depending on the size of your family and the complexity. But for the business, for sure. I have seen so many family businesses where like the second or third generation are running it just like the generation before them, like the generation before them. So bringing in outside people that have other business experience can really round out the view and the vision for the business. And for an advisor to be valuable and appropriate, they got to have the relevant experience. It cannot be just, you know, the current generation's lawyer and accountant and a country club buddy. That's not an outside advisor. The advisors, you know, in and from the Vistage or YPO world are wonderful because they're in, you know, support groups, and they're used to giving advice and used to taking advice in a very, very effective way. So if you don't have an advisory board, consider adding one, particularly if you're coming up to a generational transition, because I think an effective set of advisors can help head off any of the transition issues that might come up.
Ken, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So from an advisory standpoint, let's say someone is a member of Vistage or the Executive Forum. They could also – you're a national organization at USC, Marshall Family Business Program, right?
Yes.
So that's separate from being in a – can be separate from a Vistage group, right?
Absolutely. You know, because the Vistage and YPO were really set up to provide support and resources for the CEO. And in our family business program, we're set up to provide advice and resources and support for the relevant members of the family business. You know, so in our programs and our meetings, we rarely see just one member of the family. It's usually, you know, current generation and next generation and husbands and wives and brothers and sisters and cousins, you know, sitting in the meetings and discussing and addressing the issues that are facing, you know, the business, the family, and the family business.
And if someone's in a part of a country where the advisory might be a little tough to find, do you help guide the family on how to go about finding a local advisor?
Yeah,
remotely?
We try to do that remotely, yes, and we normally network into some local Vistage chairs because
okay.
they, you know, are pretty good resources within the business community. And it's also something where we can help provide some guidance to the family on how to go looking for advisory members. You know, if they do not have a business plan, you got to have a business plan, you know, and if the business plan really needs to look hard at the strengths and the weaknesses and the opportunities and the threats that are facing the business and the family. And then, you know, we advise and we try to find advisors that are strong in areas where the family might be weak. You know, if the family is, you know, stymied with growth, well, you know, how do you grow? It's either acquisitions, new products, or geographic expansion. So we go try to find an advisor that has successfully grown a business from $20 million to $50 million through acquisitions, new products, and geographic expansion so that they can bring that outside experience to the table.
Okay. That's very helpful. We have another question, then we'll keep going.
Yep.
I'm not sure if I understand the question, but how many advisors in this role for a $10 million size company?
Well, I think to me, you got to, if it's just one person, that's just one person's advice, you know, and I think you need three is a pretty good starting point, you know, because if you get one advisor, you're only getting one person's opinion. If you get two advisors, what if they don't have the same advice? But if you got three, then, you know, you're getting some good sounding board, some good feedback, and then you can, you know, filter through it and make the right decision for yourself. And
okay. And
I also want to say that, you know, an advisory board, they're giving advice. They're it's not a fiduciary position where they're telling you what to do. You're not giving up any control at all. You're just looking for some outside wisdom to give you some additional input so that you can make the best decision, you know, for your business and for your family. And over time, if the advice is valuable, you keep your advisory board, and if it's not valuable, it usually self-selects and you wind it down. If an advisor provides the feedback and enjoys the process, they stay. If they're providing feedback and you're not following it, they lose interest and leave, because this is a position where people are helping, are giving back and helping pay forward. They're not participating in advisory boards for as a career and a way to get rich. So it's truly a support group.
So Ken, two more questions. How to graciously remove someone from the advisory board? Actually, it's three questions. How to graciously remove somebody from an advisory board? Second question is, should there be a time limit just so there's fresh blood coming in? And third question is, how much should they get paid, if anything?
Okay. It's pretty easy to to fire somebody from an advisory board? You go to Starbucks and you have a conversation saying it's not working out for me for these reasons. Thank you for your participation. And I don't think there are any hard feelings there. It's an interesting idea to rotate advisory. I think it would depend with me how complex the business is, how big it is, and what the goals are. But yes, I would think every 3 to 5 years it would be nice to get a fresh set of eyes on the business so it's it doesn't get stale. Also, you know, with your advisory board, if they come to a meeting engaged, prepared, having read the deck before and good questions, you'll know they want to be there. If they show up and say, "What are we talking about today?" then that's not a good signal.
And that also puts the family in the position of having to be organized and follow through, so there's a structure to it, which goes back to matrix.
Yeah, there's always an agenda for you know, a board meeting. I like to have a theme for each quarter, and I have found that the third quarter of the year, updating a strategic plan usually makes good sense. The fourth quarter is what is the operating budget in the plan for this next fiscal year, if that makes sense, in the fourth quarter. The first quarter, I like to look at the team, the people, because, you know, it's all about getting the right people in the right place. So I like to look at the personnel and the team real hard in the first quarter. And then the second quarter is, you know, what strategic initiatives are on your radar screen. So you think about how that plays. Second quarter, what strategic initiatives are on your radar screen? Third quarter, what's your long-term strategic plan update? Fourth quarter, what does your tactical operating budget and plan look like for the next year? First quarter, do you have the team to pull this off? So that gets to be a fairly nice rotation.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
And then yeah, it's there is typically compensation for the board members. I like to suggest, you know, plus or minus, and again, it depends on the size of the company and all these other things, but you know, plus or minus $3,000 per meeting is reasonable. I also like to suggest that you treat the advisory board as if they were a member of the management team. So if at the end of the year the management team has performed well and is getting bonuses, it's fun to have bonuses for the board members too. And it's not a lot of money. It's just the alignment. It's nice to have, you know, a risk and reward and an alignment tool in place so that if things are going well, the advisory board's giving good advice, you're following it, you're making more money, and you're paying the management team, you know, a little spiff to those advisors is also an appropriate thing to consider. And again, it's more for alignment and fun than for huge amounts of money.
That's great, Ken. Thank you. All right, we have a few minutes left before we open up the line.
Let me finish with a couple more things here, Dana. We talked about this six transitions model for the founder, the family, business, management, governance, ownership, and legacy and estate. And at USC, we've created an assessment tool, a family business checkup, that I would be glad to run for any members who are listening and participating today. And what it is, Dana, is it's an online tool where in each of these six areas we have six questions. And we ask the relevant members of the family to score how strongly they agree or disagree or see how well they think the family is doing in each one of these 6x6 or 36 questions. And then we provide some feedback on which areas we think the family should focus on to improve and areas that the family thinks are doing really, really well. So, you know, we'll be glad to make that available to your guest, Dana. All they would need to do is send me an email, and I'll get it up on the USC site here, too, in the next couple of days.
Okay, great. And then on the screen, you'll see Ken's contact information, and because you're attending today, there's no fee for that, and Ken, and you'll spend some time in debriefing.
Yep.
The results.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. And one more. And somebody just wrote a question because it just popped in. The question was what you addressed earlier: a number of advisors for a $10 million services company with 100 employees, and that would still be three people.
Yeah, I three really gets to be a nice number. I mean, okay. You really don't need more than that if you get the right people. But and again, I like three because one person is one person's advice. Two people, they may have different opinions. And when you, by the time you get three people, you know, you're hearing a really good vetting of the issues and a really good discussion.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You know, and this has two summary slides here, Dana, are the, you know, kind of the 12 things for people to keep on the radar screen as they're navigating those six transitions and building their successful multi-generational family business is to, you know, create your vision and share it, change it willingly, know, for the, especially the founders, know when and how to let go, make sure it goes smoothly for you and for the family, promote good family relationships, keep your values in balance, build your team, both, you know, the family member team and the supporting cast of professional managers. Take care of your culture. You know, we have a line that culture will eat strategy for lunch every day. So be very, very conscious of your culture in your family and your business, because if it goes south, it's really, really hard to recover. Optimize your resources. Build long-term sustainable value in your business. Even if you're thinking about selling your business, always be thinking about long-term sustainable value. Build tomorrow's leaders today. Plan your transfer in each of these transitions, because, you know, the transfer is going to happen. It's just going to be planned or not. And if it's planned, it goes so much smoother, is less painful for people, and you help to preserve the wealth that you're generating in your business. And then for sure keep some of the financial eggs in other baskets. Again, if the business model changes, like what has Uber done to the taxi cab business? You know, so if the business model changes, make sure that you have some of your wealth in other asset classes.
That is very sage advice. We're going to take, we have one more question, and then we're going to open up the line in just about 60 seconds. All right, two more questions. So Ken, first question is, how many years out from the founder's retirement would you recommend getting the wheels turning regarding transition succession?
3 to 5. I think it takes a while for the founder to transition and let go and find other things to do unless they're really active outside. And I also think it takes at least 18 months for the next manager to make a few mistakes, learn from them, and so everybody's confident that that next leadership team is in place. So that's why I'm thinking it's a 3 to 5 year process.
That's great. Thank you. And Karen, also thank you for your kind comment you just put in. We're going to open up the line in just about 30 seconds so you can talk directly with Ken. Before we do that, on the screen, you'll have the opportunity there to sign up for an upcoming open line, which is actually next week. It's next Tuesday. It's the second in a series of a three-part series, Where to Go Fishing for Candidates and What to Do When All Else Fails. So if you sign up, we'll also send you session number one. I want to thank you all for attending today. I'm going to turn off the recording feature in just a second because we've had feedback where during our Q&A time people don't want their voices recorded, so we want to respect that. So for this segment, Ken, I want to thank you so much for your, being back on Open Line and for all the great ideas that you shared and for each of you attending Open Line, and looking forward to have you attend our future programs, and you can see a list of them on our website. And then before we sign off, before we turn the recording feature off and open up the line, don't forget, for those of you listening, you can email Ken at ken.ude@gmail.com, and Ken will send you a link so you can take this assessment tool at no charge from the USC Marshall Family Business Program, and then Ken will debrief with you, and there's no charge, just mentioning you've attended this open line program. So that concludes this section. Let me turn this off, and then we are going to open the line up. So I would ask, we have a good-sized audience today. So if everyone could please put your phones on mute so we don't pick up background noise or music, and then unmute your phone if you have a question. So just, we'll be back in just a second here.